Good morning.
Well, good morning. Happy Fay Day. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's great to be alive, and it's great to be a Texan.
Oh, when isn't it? Oh, my goodness. That could be our theme, like, every day, like, literally.
That right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, when I see these poor people in all these other places, I'm so thankful. I go, oh my gosh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, of all the places that you could be, there's some pretty disastrous ones, and it kind of puts it all back in perspective, just in case we forgot.
That's right. We need to be reminded every once in a while that, you know, freedom is in Texas, I tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like if you look it up in the dictionary, they should have the state right there. Freedom,
that's
Texas.
Exactly right. Mm. And, you know, people that move to Texas get a shock. You know, it's a shock to their system.
Yes.
I'm always reading about it. They say, you know, when you move to Texas, it's a big shock to your system.
Yeah. You know, especially if you move from someplace like New Jersey, you know.
That's right. Or California.
Those
people are used to regulation after regulation rules and rules, things you can't do. And when you get to Texas, you found out it's a can-do place.
Yeah.
You know, we can do anything.
Yeah. And that's how it should be, you know.
That's right. And freedom starts at the Texas line.
It does. It really,
I mean,
literally.
That's where the freedom starts.
It does. And if you're heading the wrong way and heading out of the state, then that's where it ends. And it'll
that's
be a
exactly
shock.
Exactly right.
I would imagine.
And you're going to be in shock if you move anywhere other than Texas.
Yes. Yeah. I know it's a shock for people moving in, but for people moving out, oh, my, because it's not like this in other places. And, boy, you get a rude awakening when you find out the hard way. Oh, my.
And when you find out, you know, Texans are friendly people, they're nice, they help their neighbors, they're not used to that.
No.
These people come from other states, and they're rude. They're rude on the highway, and we don't know what to think.
Yeah.
You know?
You know,
it's shocking.
Yes. And the driving, like you said, on the highway, oh, my gosh, rude. Oh, that doesn't even begin
they
to
are
explain
rude.
It.
And I look immediately to see what license plate says.
Yeah.
And I guarantee it's always out of state because people here, we don't honk at each other. A lady wrote on Next Door the other day, she said, remember, Texans don't honk. You know, we're polite to our neighbors. We're polite to other drivers. And they let you in line. You know, that's what I love about Texans is, you know, if you're pulling out from somewhere, they'll stop. They let you in line. They're not in that big a hurry.
Yeah.
And then you get these new people, and they'll run over you.
Oh, they will. They will.
They just, they have no patience for us.
Mm-mm. And you can tell without even looking at their tag that they're not, they're either from here or they're not. And you can tell almost immediately. And if you start looking, it's like, oh, they're driving great. They're probably from here. Or if they start, you know, honking and running you off the road, you can probably tell, oh, they're probably not from here. And then you look at their tag and you, yep, they're not. So.
And I've had two different instances.
Really?
You know, where the guy was as rude as can be, and I'm in a three-lane highway. Okay, he can pick any lane he wants. He's behind me. He pulls around and acts ugly.
Really?
Yes, and I looked around at myself, and I said, what did I do? What in the heck is wrong with him? I mean, I didn't do anything except just go down the road minding my own business.
Yep.
But, something about my driving offended him.
And he wasn't from here, was he?
No, he wasn't.
Mm-mm. Yeah, let me guess. You was probably like, you were on the interstate, there's three lanes, you're in one of them, the other two were probably wide open. He rode your butt like nobody's business, whipped around you, whipped right back in front of you, and then took off.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That's exactly
I knew it.
What happened.
I knew it.
And I was just shaking my head. I mean, you know, it was a Saturday afternoon. I was just cruising down through there, you know, and then he did that, and it ruined my day.
Yeah, yeah.
I go, why was he so rude? You know, what did I do? And I'm thinking. I said, all I did is drive my car. You know, I'm just going down the highway.
Yeah, minding your own business, not even trying
minding my own business, which I love to do.
Except when you're on Nextdoor and then you like to get into other people's business, or at least read about other people's business.
I like to read about other people. You know, the tortoise escaped this week again.
Oh, no.
There was two roosters that they were trying to find the owner. The roosters were walking down the highway. I tell you, it's because those roosters got in the snow last week and they left home. It was so deep they left, let me tell you.
Like, we're out of here.
That's the deepest snow that I've seen in years.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I mean, you just got clobbered.
We got clobbered. I haven't seen that much snow. I don't even remember when I've seen 10 inches of snow.
I know.
I just don't remember.
I don't ever remember. And usually, you know, you would think, you know, like Lubbock and all that would be, you know, that's like where you expect it. Not necessarily over in Dallas. It's weird. Strange patterns. I don't know what's happening.
I don't either. And, you know, Texas lost on the Cotton Bowl. And they said Bevo was very upset. He was very sad. Oh, gosh, he was sad.
You were just talking about him on trivia a couple weeks ago.
We were talking about him. And then they brought him up this week and said he was very sad when they lost. Oh, my gosh. But at least he got to go to the game.
Well, that's true. At least he got to go. And maybe greet some people and maybe scare some other people who aren't familiar.
That's right. But at least he didn't break loose and, you know, go running down through there. That was a miracle.
Yeah, that's good. Of course, they were probably looking over their shoulder just to make sure.
I wouldn't doubt it a bit.
That's funny.
Because, you know, he is pretty big. Those horns are long.
Yes. Yes,
those damn horns are so long.
That is not something you see at a normal game. So,
I know. Can you imagine?
Yeah, if you've never seen that before, you're probably, you know, second guessing, maybe kind of like looking out the side of your giving it the side eye every once in a while, thinking, is that thing going to stay there, or are we charging, or what's happening? So, yeah. I can imagine that.
Only in Texas.
Well, that's what makes us better.
That's what makes us bigger and better. Wow.
Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
All right, so I know that investments are not necessarily seasonal things. It's pretty much status quo all year long. But since we're like a couple weeks into the new year, into January now, how are we starting the new year? Are things...
Well, we're bidding on a lot of policies. You know, we lost that one big one that we really wanted, and everybody was all for. But we're bidding three large policies now. We'll know, you know, first of the week if we got them. One of them is a pancreatic cancer. And, you know, we've done so well with those. And everybody, you know, fights to get in those. But we don't know if we'll get it. But we did have a maturity.
Really?
Carol Werther. Several people are in it. We bought it May 1st of 2024. She was 66, had lung cancer. It was a 15-month policy. It came in 6 months, so they made 31% in 6 months.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So, I mean, that's a good profit. If you can make 31% in 6 months, you're doing great.
Yeah. Golly, I can't think of another investment where you can do that. Boy.
I can't think of anything that's going to make you that much money that quick.
Mm-mm.
And it doesn't happen every day, but when it does, it's a great day in Texas.
Yeah. Boy, 15 down to 6, that's a huge...
It was. She was a lot sicker than everyone thought. And I don't remember on the other lung cancer ones we've done if any of them came in early or if they just came in on time. They said 15 months. It was not 15 months. It was 6 months. And that 31% was in 6 rather than 15 months.
Wow. And you just did that this past May?
Yes, we did on May 1st.
And, wow.
Yeah. and she was 66.
Oh, my word. Oh, wow. Well,
yeah.
Then I mean that's one of those things that we talk about. You know, sometimes you know policies come in early, and this is one of those that did. And so I would imagine that probably people will take that profit and then go ahead and reinvest it. Hopefully, you'll get at least one of the ones you're bidding on now, and then it can go back into more. And that's really how the whole thing is set up to work best, right?
That's right. And, of course, you know, it'll take them several weeks to get the death certificate and to get the check. But in probably 4 or 5 weeks, they'll have the money in the bank.
Mm.
But just knowing you've got it coming is a blessing right there.
Yeah.
Just knowing that, you know, in a few weeks you're going to get your check for this is great.
Yeah.
Now, I think we're going to have a lot of maturities. I'm expecting some. I've been looking up dates and, you know, when they think people are going to mature. So we've got several, I think, coming.
Wow. So some LEs are about to be due-ish.
Yes, I think so. I think several. And I'm watching one case in particular that's a large one that I think in a few months, it may not be this month, but I think pretty soon it's going to expire. We're watching the person very carefully. And, you know, we check on these people like every 3 months. We make a call. We talk to either them or their wife or whoever and see how they're doing, if they're taking more chemo, if they're taking radiation, you know, what the situation is.
So you
and
can see
we've
this.
We've had several that have just quit taking anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They said they're just going to let it happen naturally now.
Oh, my word.
I guess I didn't realize
or maybe just didn't think about it that you can see these in real time.
Huh. You bet.
I didn't.
And so we actually know what's happening with them.
Wow.
Because so we check on every one of them every 3 months.
Oh, really? Oh.
You have to because we want to know, you know, if they're getting worse, if they're in the hospital or they're at home, what drugs they're taking. What chemo, you know, we check that all the time.
Wow. So it's not a matter of just, you know, do the deal and then just sit back and wait.
No, you can't do that. Oh. You cannot do that.
Wow.
You got to be on it all the time. And of course, you know, Mr. Denton, the one that we thought would pass away this year, Mr. Denton has had a replacement of a valve in his heart.
Oh.
At 91.
Wow.
This is crazy. Why? Usually, or in my past, the cases I've known about, if they were over 75 or 80, they never replace a valve in your heart.
Yeah, that's risky.
It's very risky. Ooh. So, but sometimes, I guess if you've got enough money, you can get anything.
I guess you can.
If you're rich enough, you can do it, folks.
Wow. That's one of those that you've had for a while, right?
Yes, but a long time.
You keep tabs on that one.
Since I was born, I think.
But it's one of the last ones. And so
this is the last one of those. And when it's gone, it's gone, and we're going to have a bonfire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Up in smoke.
Yeah. Oh, my word. All right. Well, then it sounds like a lot of promising things, especially for this early. I know in the past we've talked, and there's been, you know, kind of situations where some of these other companies will, they have their budget for the year, so to speak, and then they'll just go in and they'll kind of like, I guess, maybe blow their whole budget all in, like, you know, right off the bat in the new year. Is that even a thing anymore, or is it just kind of like consistent all the way through?
It's not as prevalent. 3 years ago, Magna and all these other big companies, the first 4 months, they would outbid us on everything, and we wouldn't start getting anything till March because they would outbid us on everything. But Magna's pulled their horns back in. I haven't seen them bid on anything lately. Because, you know, they fired the president, vice president. I think 15 officers were fired over their buying skills. Their skills weren't very good.
Oh, wow.
And they promised them all this money, like 8%, and it didn't happen.
Wow. So then that sounds like that greatly benefits you and investors.
It does. And, you know, the fixed rate policies, we don't ever talk about it, but for people that want something like a CD, you know, right now, the 3-year and 5-year is over 5%.
Is it really?
It's paying over 5%. That's the best you can get anywhere. But you can get that 5% for 3 years or 5 years guaranteed.
Boy, those haven't been that high in a long time.
Anybody just wants a CD-like deal, they can do that. But right now, and you know, the bonds, everybody's been talking about the bonds. A 30-year bond's only paying that much.
Really?
You know? We're paying as much as a 30-year bond.
Jeez. I mean, that's... Are bonds even still a thing for people, or...
You know, they're saying people are not buying bonds like they used to. You know, during the war, starting years ago, the 40s, the 50s, people bought bonds every time they had a payday. On payday, they always put so much in bonds. Lots of people were buying bonds, but I don't hear about it a lot anymore. Some of the big investment companies buy bonds.
Do they really?
And foreign governments buy our bonds. A lot of people buy U.S. savings bonds. But I don't hear about it like I used to.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly the big investors anymore that buy them, like, you know, counties and states and things like that.
Yeah, because, boy, I mean, I hadn't even thought about bonds until you just brought that up. And I thought, oh, my word, I didn't even realize that they were even a thing or anybody. But it sounds like the whoever, you know, the people that are buying bonds have shifted. And so
I think it's really shifted because I don't even hear about it anymore.
Wow.
From individuals.
I'm shocked at those CD rates, though. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah. Our rates are, you know, 5% right now.
Wow. It almost kind of seems like things maybe have flipped a little bit, and it may not be the actual market. It might just be perception, but it seems like, you know, where bonds used to be really popular and maybe annuities kind of just didn't get a whole lot of attention, annuities are...
They pay more than bonds, and they pay more than a CD.
Yeah, I mean, that's impressive.
Annuities always pay more than a CD. Now I say that always. That's not true. I remember years and years ago when CDs got so high at one time, but they've never paid that in the last 10 years.
Jeez, wow!
Then you know, Bank of America got caught. I was reading about it this week. They gave all these people these accounts, and they were supposed to pay all this interest. And they locked them in at 0.30.
Oh.
And the government has caught them at all this. It's fixing to cost them millions and millions and millions.
Wow.
They didn't tell people what they'd done on their accounts. So they said people lost millions and millions of dollars with those accounts at Bank of America.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And they locked them in and didn't tell them that these old accounts they had for them weren't paying but less than 1%.
Jeez. 0.3?
And they had another account that they could have put them in that would have made them some money, but not this account, and they kept them locked into that old account.
Uh-oh. Boy, that's...
And the government finally figured it out.
That's not good for them. I mean, boy, that'll take
a hurt. No, it's always late when the government finds out something that the banks do.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's just shocking. At 0.3, I'm just.
Yeah, 0.30, it said.
Wow.
when I read it this week, and said they had another account that would have paid them several points, and they never told them that they were keeping them in this old account when they could have moved them over to the other account where they would have made interest. It said it locked them into those old accounts at less than 1%.
Why? I mean, why would...
Who knows why they did it to them?
Oh, wow. I mean, obviously, I don't want to say obviously, but was it just possibly an oversight. I'm just looking for any kind of
not
anything.
Not when it's millions and millions and millions.
Oh.
It was a lot of money.
Wow. Jeez, that's just, it's sad when the government catches up to you and then it's gone on for so long and then it's just really just, ooh, that's too bad. Yikes. Okay, well, fortunately, you know, what you're doing with life settlements and annuities, none of this even affects any of that anyway. So, you know, when people are, you know,
not affected by anything like that. So, you know, I love it when our rates go up. I love it when they keep the bonuses. This 13% bonus, we've hung on to it a long time now.
Yeah.
You know, a year ago, we didn't have this bonus. We've had it all summer long. At one point, they were talking about canceling it. They didn't cancel it. So on annuities, you've still got that 13% bonus and plus whatever it makes. So that's really a great return. And then as you put more money in it, you get that 13% bonus for 3 years every time you put money in. So that's good. And I don't know if anybody else is going to give you a good bonus plus what you make.
Yeah, that's on top of your profit. So it's just
that's on top of your profit. And the profit has been good. As I told you, this one company, we got the statement on the guy and he made 23%. And I know I didn't imagine that.
That's a big deal. I mean, that's a really big deal.
It's a big deal. It wasn't my imagination, thank goodness.
Yeah. I mean, my goodness. It's just, you know, it just seems like, you know, like, I don't know, there was rumors that, you know, the bonuses were going to go away in December. And now that, you know, we're into January and they're still here, it's just, I don't know. It just seems like this is almost... I know conservative investments are conservative for a reason because people aren't, you know, you're not swinging for the fence. You're not looking for that, you know, all of a sudden we're going to, you know, make millions of dollars overnight. It's the kind of investment where, you know, people are going to be steady over time and solid and you don't have to worry about losing your principal. It just seems that annuities may be... I don't want to say the new way to go because they've always been a fantastic investment. It just maybe they're getting more excitement, which is kind of relative because it's sort of a boring, boring investment. But people make a ton of money, and so that's really all that really matters, I guess, is money making.
Well, you want to make money and you want your money safe. That's the two things.
Yeah,
you know, you don't want to lose your money. And as long as you can make a good profit and your money's secure, you're in good shape.
Yeah, and always protect your principal. I mean, that's kind of the thing that you've always been saying. You know, make sure you protect your principal and either one.
That's exactly right. Because if you've got your principal, you can live to fight another day.
Yeah. And
you know, but if you don't protect the principal, you don't have anything to work with.
Yeah.
So that's why your principal is so important to you. Because this is your livelihood. This is your retirement. Your wife will divorce you if you lose all your money. I mean, it doesn't make sense to take that risk, you know?
And whatever you got left, she'll take that too.
That's right. And, you know, I talked to a lady last summer, and she called me. And they had retired, and I asked her what she wanted to do. She said, I need to do an annuity. She said, we sold our company. My husband lost it all.
Oh.
So this is bad. At the end of your journey here, your husband makes a bad investment, loses it, and now all you've got is enough to put it in an annuity to keep it safe.
Oh, geez.
So she did an annuity with me because she's worried about what he was going to do.
Yeah. It sounds like that's a reasonable concern.
And I don't know what he lost it in. She didn't tell me. I was really curious what he invested in. They lost all their money.
Yeah.
I mean, if you sell your business, you don't want to go into risk if you're 65 years old.
No, I mean that's when you're at that point, you're hitting the golden stride. It's like you've spent all these years building it up, and then you sell it, and then it's like, all right, here we go. We got the big stash in the bank. We're going to retire and ride off into the sunset, and then all of a sudden, it's like chutes and ladders. Boom! It's all gone. That's just shocking.
And, you know, I talked to a gentleman 2 weeks ago that's raising his grandkids at his age. And, you know, it's a hard luck story that he had to take them and is raising them. So, you know, he needs annuities as well as, you know, an IRA. He needs the IRA transferred from one company to the next, but he needs the annuity to guarantee money for those children for their college if something happens to him. So, you know, that's the best way to do it. Always have that backup. The annuity is a backup. You may not need it today, but you're going to need it later, and it's always there for you, and it's guaranteed. So it's always best, you know, to have that backup, to have something that's solid.
Yeah.
Instead of having it all at risk. You know, if you risk everything and you lose it, what do you have to retire on?
Exactly. There's nothing left to recover with. You've lost all your tools, and, essentially. So.
And if you make a bad investment, you know, they're not going to give you your money back and say, "We're sorry you lost. We'll just help you out. We'll give it back to you." That doesn't work that way.
No.
And they just say, "I'm sorry. The investment went south. It's just not there.
Better luck next time."
Better luck next time.
Yeah.
And they'll say, "Just go get some more money. We'll do it again."
Yeah. And then you're at the risk again. But with an annuity, if the market goes up, your annuity goes up. But if the market goes down, your annuity has that stopgap. And so you don't have to worry about losing literally.
And the annuities everything. Have the best reputation of anybody. It's not like in the stock market. You know, you have good and you have bad. You have some companies that are worth dealing with. You have some you don't want to touch. And the average man on the street doesn't know all this. They don't know which companies are good. They don't have somebody that says, "Well, look, I've got this investment and it's wonderful." They're not going to tell you if they lost money at that company.
Yeah.
They're never going to do that. They're going to paint this rosy picture. And I've had people do that. They've come to me and said, "Well, they told me that this brokerage house is going to be so good, I put my money with them and I lost $50,000.
Jeez. Wow. That's a big lesson to, I mean, that's.
It's a hard lesson.
Wow.
And, you know, most people are working every day. They don't have time to check a stock account. They're having to rely on somebody else. But if you're investing in annuities or life settlements, you know where you're at all the time. It's not going to go up and down every day or every month. It's steady. That's what I love about life settlements. You know, it's a straightforward deal. We're going to invest the money. It goes into a life insurance policy. And when they die, you get paid.
Yeah. They don't discount the payout for some random condition. It's always the full
value. No,
they're
not going to say, "Well, we've decided not to pay you today." That doesn't happen that way.
Mm-mm. And you don't have to worry about, you know, them not having the money to pay out because they've got all the reserves on hand, literally.
That's right. They have enough reserves to cover everybody that ever bought a policy.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not making home loans. They're not making car loans. They're not doing risky things. That's what I love about life insurance companies. You know, when they put the rules on them years ago, they limited what they can invest in. And it's been that way all these years. They've never changed it. They've never said you can do risk. You can do all the stock market. They don't allow that. They have to be in safe investments. And they're audited twice a year by federal and state. So they're audited more than anybody in the world.
Highly regulated.
Yeah. It's more regulated than anything I know. So life insurance companies are solid. They're huge. They have to be. And they're A and A-plus rated. The ones that we use, we only use one that's a B company, and they're worth $2
billion. Wow.
So our lawyer said we can use that one. But the others, you know, are A and double A, and they're worth billions and billions. Not a couple of billion, but 50 billion, 60
Jeez.
Billion. So billions... we can't even count them.
They're well into the B's.
We don't know how to add that high, I don't think.
We don't have enough fingers and toes.
No, and we don't have investments that call for that kind of money, I'll
tell you. That's
but,
true.
The people with us, you know, they're making good money. They're reinvesting. And that's what you have to keep reinvesting if you're going to make money. You can't get in and say, I've made this much money, I'm going to get out.
Yeah. It's not like
if you're getting older, let's say you've been with us 10, 15 years, and so you're 80 years old now. The best thing you can do is just annuities. If you're 80 years old, do a fixed rate annuity. It's better than a CD, and just sit there and cruise on out.
Is it because of the consistency of annuities?
Yes, they are consistent. You know where you stand. You know, you can do a fixed or an index or both, or just a fixed if you're elderly. And you may not be elderly at 80. You may be going great guns, playing golf every day, you know, harassing your wife every day, you know?
In a good way.
In a good way, you know, giving her heck. You're home all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's what wives hate. Once a man retires, they tell you, you don't know how to vacuum the floor, you don't know how to clean, and then they say, well, you know, maybe you'd like to do this, you know? And that's when they get out of the house. They head for the coffee shop.
Yeah, as they should.
As they should. A lot of women tell me, you know, I've been doing this job all these years, I thought I was doing a good job, but once my husband retired, he started giving me advice.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They don't need any advice, man. Leave them alone.
Men get bored easy. And so when they retire.
They do. They get bored. They need to either be at the golf course, the coffee shop, or in their shop doing a little work.
Yes. Find a hobby. Travel.
They need a hobby bad. They need to get it before they retire, where they're ready when they retire.
Yeah. I mean, golly, some people even wait until they retire to you know, start ranching. And so that'll keep you busy without having to, you know, get in everybody else's business.
That's right. You need to stay on your own lane there, boys.
Yeah. Well put.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. With life settlements, it's not just a one and done kind of a thing. Your investors that are thriving the most are the ones that are in multiple policy, because as one matures, they reinvest into another. And, you know, and I guess we were talking about the consistency with annuities. You know, life settlements, they're consistent, but you can't, like, put it on a calendar. It's like if a policy is set to mature in, you know, say maybe 18 months, it could be 20, it could be 21. On the other hand, it could be, you know, 15. So, you know, it could go either way. It's not that you can, you know, set your watch to it. So if people are...
Well,
I guess,
the thing is, doctors are estimating. They're saying, okay, yeah, I've got this client here with cancer. This is the way the cancer looks. This is what the progression looks like, and this is what I think it'll be. But they could be wrong. It could be moved up and it happens sooner, or the person may be doing better with the chemo and the radiation, and they may last longer.
Yeah.
You never know for sure. It's not exact, but it's pretty close. The companies that we're using have all the science behind them, and they're doing a good job. And, you know, we read all that. It's $1 million or more. We require two life expectancies. We want two people to tell us, not just one. If it's less than $1 million, we'll take one. But $1 million or more, we want two to be sure we're right.
Yeah. I mean, that second opinion, it can be. What would happen if you got two that were, say, they may not be exact, but what if they were, like, drastically different?
We've had it happen many times.
Really?
And we back off when that happens.
Hmm.
If it's too far apart, there's something wrong.
Hmm.
And, yeah. And so the other day we had four reports on one person.
Really?
And that was pretty good. Yeah, if you can get four, we had four on this one person. That doesn't happen but once in a lifetime. But usually there's at least two reports out there.
Hmm. No.
And we know which companies give the best reports, the longest, the most detail. That's the ones we want. We need every detail we can get. And then we've also got the medical. This week I was reading one on Herman Hospital in Houston all about this lady's cancer. I was reading when the surgery occurred, what kind of a mass it was, everything about her. When she came to the hospital, you know, she was had nausea. She was about to faint. She had severe pain, all these other symptoms. So they did all the tests. They did the MRIs. Then they did the surgery.
Hmm. You know,
so it, we get all that information.
And you're kind of going through all these different pieces of data that you have. I can't think of another type of investment that has this much data to make such a well-informed investment as with Life Settlements. It's like there may be some gut feelings and maybe some guesses for some other types of investments, but you really don't have a whole ton of data like this. It just seems like this is a, in its own special, unique category, I guess, because of the data that people have.
And then sometimes I'll be reading right down through it and it'll say, well, they're doing really fine. They're now in remission. Well, throw that one out.
Yeah.
I mean, they may not survive, but if they're in remission for 2 years, we can't wait for that.
Yeah.
You know, we need something that's now.
You know, I guess, you know, people say you can't judge a book by its cover, and I'm sure you get policies all the time that on the surface, the headline, so to speak, it looks like, oh, wow, this is going to be a great policy. But then you start getting down into it and start reading more and more, and it starts to paint a different picture, and you realize from an investment standpoint, this is not a good move, and you'll just throw those out. I would imagine you get some like that that look good at first.
Every week, three or four. And or they'll send one over that they're going to live 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And they'll send me, and I'll go, are you out of your mind? We don't even want it to be over 30 months.
Hmm. They'll try to slip those in and think that you're not paying attention, but you are.
We're definitely paying attention because I'm reading and I'm going down through there. And then it says, oh, by the way, you know, this is not going to happen. So then we say, we're sorry, we're not bidding your policy. Or they'll send it over, and the premiums are 10% or 7%.
Yikes. Wow.
And it looks like a good policy until we got to the premium. But everything has to work. The length of time, the type of cancer, and the premium. It's all got to work together. And if it doesn't, it's not any good.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at all these things. You're looking at the profit margin. You're looking at the LE. You're looking at the, you know, all these things, their lifestyle, not only just data like numbers, but you're also looking at other things like if they're out, you know, playing golf or traveling or, you know, visiting places or whatever they're doing. You know, if they're out doing those things, then those are not the kinds of policies that you're looking for. You're looking for very specific things, which is what is making this such a great investment for so many people. I love when you tell stories about how you have investors that have, you know, made, you know, $250,000 in interest in a year. It's amazing to me that there are so many people in the world that still love to take the kinds of risks, knowing what can happen sometimes. I mean, the rewards can be great, but boy, the losses, and I think we've all been through enough now that the losses maybe are still affecting people in some ways, you know. So it just seems like a great investment for people as we go through time, as we go through, you know, history, the different kinds of conditions that Life Settlements survive, not only survive, but thrive during. It's just, you know, if the market crashed, say, on Monday, people in Life Settlements wouldn't miss a beat. They wouldn't have to worry about losing anything because it's a life insurance policy. So this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
Well, we're going to talk about a young man here in Texas. When he was a very young guy, did a lot of things, became a big baseball player from Texas.
Oh.
And he gave up a promising baseball career to become a landman and a wildcatter in the oil business.
Really?
His name's Frank Soster. And he saw more potential in oil than he did in baseball. He's now 98, lives in Amarillo. He was an outfielder for the St. Louis Browns.
Whoa.
And it's been almost a century of booms and busts. He was born in 1926 on Missouri farm. He was educated in a little one-room schoolhouse. He carried water to wheat fields for 25 cents a day at age six.
Oh, age six. Wow.
At age six, people. By the 10, he was the youngest of six kids, and he founded a fur trapping enterprise with the Remington rifle to buy used books for school.
Wow.
And then as a teen, he heard about the attack on Pearl Harbor, and he was walking home from a movie, and a Model T pulled up and told him the news. And, of course, he didn't know what Pearl Harbor was, and, he didn't know anything about it. And then he was, on his 17th birthday, he enlisted in the Navy, enrolled in the V-12 officer training program. So he was an apprentice seaman. He said his rank was so low I could crawl under a rattlesnake's belly, under a wagon wheel with a stovepipe hat on. And this was a forerunner to the Navy SEALs. And President Truman dropped the first atomic bomb. He said they were 1,000 miles from Japan. And he said, we had a big party. There was no alcohol, but golly, we made it. And, of course, this was a strong farm boy. His wrist from swinging an axe and milking cows, and it made him a really great for athlete in college. So he signed a minor league contract with three batting titles. He was named Player of the Year in 1950. Still, fame never stopped him from taking off-season roustabout jobs in the oil field. He loved the oil field, even though he was a success at baseball. His heart wasn't invested. Invested his baseball earnings to drill for crude oil.
Wow.
Then he signed with the Browns in 1951, and this was a childhood dream to play baseball.
Hmm.
And, he loved it. He played against Ted Williams, Yogi Berra, Minnie Mofuso, and along with Texan Dr. Bobby Brown and Eddie Robinson. But he's most remembered for a wacky public relations stunt by the Browns. They brought in this little guy, 3'7", to pitch against him in a World Series game. Then in 1952, he was at spring training. They called him back to active duty during the Korean War. And he already had problems with his throwing arm. So when he got out in 1954, he took a job as line man for Humble Oil.
Hmm.
And he never attended another major league game. He loved oil and gas. He worked till he was 85 in the oil business.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine?
Really?
But he had a chance to stay and play baseball the rest of his career, and he chose oil and gas. Can you imagine that?
Wow. You know, initially I can say, no, I can't imagine that. But, you start to think about it. It's like, yeah, I get it, how it gets in your blood and it becomes a passion. I can see that.
Yeah, it did. And to work till 85, that tells you something. He loved it.
Yeah.
But, the milking those cows and swinging a pickaxe is what made his arms.
Yeah.
And, I had a friend that years ago, he said, he walked every day from their farm to school, and he said it made his legs so strong that he danced a lot, and everything he did, he said that's why late in life he was still going, because the strength that he had from milking cows and from walking all those distances to school, made him really strong. And I think that's what happened to this kid, milking cows and chopping wood, made his arms so strong.
Yeah,
that's why he was a good pitcher.
That's what created the foundation for him. And then it sounds like even after that, even after he was, got a little bit older, keeping active and staying moving, and all that movement keeps everything flowing too. So, wow!
But can you imagine? He was in war twice. World War II, then he was in the Korean War.
Jeez. That just,
17 years old.
I can't even imagine.
And they didn't even have a radio. When that Model T pulled up and told about it, he had to go home and tell his parents because they had no radio. They had no way of knowing any news whatsoever back then.
Yeah, it's not like today where we have our phone and we just, you know, we're bombarded with, you know, news and not news and silly things and whatever. I mean, you can connect with
more
anything.
More news than we need, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
Wow. I mean, gosh, you can connect with somebody overseas in a heartbeat on your phone, but back then you were kind of in the dark, and I'm trying to picture in my brain, you know, a car pulling up and telling them the news while he's like walking down the street, and that's how he found out. It's a very different time, but boy, it sounds like, you know, it seems like he was just drawn to these things and just knew what to do. He found out, he went
and
home,
and I don't know how he got the contract to play baseball.
Yeah.
He went to college after the war, but how did he get an audition with the Browns? How did he accomplish that?
I don't know. I mean, usually you kind of work your way up and you get noticed by somebody and then somebody else notices and your name floats around, but it's just all
and
of a sudden.
Scout, you know, usually a scout finds you.
Yeah.
You know, and asks you to try out. And I don't know how he got to the baseball from Texas is what I'm saying. How'd he get all the way up there to the Browns?
I don't know. It's just, it sounds like he's just had a bunch of things just fall in his lap somehow. I don't know. Maybe it's a bit of a mystery.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how he got there, but he did it and then played it for him against the greats.
I mean,
Yogi Berra, all these people, the best of the best. And then he walked away from it.
Yeah. He just, most people, that would be like the ultimate dream, but he just, his heart wasn't in it. And so.
No, he wanted to be in the oil business, and he was investing every dime he made in oil and gas. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, he loved it because he worked until 85.
I mean, yeah, he loved it and started out with the Humble Company.
Yeah. I mean, most people can't wait to retire, and they're counting down the days, and it's like, oh, I can't wait till I, you know, don't have to do this anymore. But he just couldn't get enough. And so probably to walk around away at 85 was probably hard enough.
And he's 90 now.
Yeah.
And just now telling his story at 90.
Wow.
I love that.
Like, my goodness. It's like, I don't know. There's something that's just different and unique about this. It's just one thing to another, to another, to another. And he seems to know what he wanted all along the way and did some really.
And apparently he was so tough. That's why he could work till 85 because, all he'd done as a boy, and he was active all that time working hard. And I guess it paid off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like if you start with that foundation and you just keep keep watering that seed, so to speak, you know, it seems like that's really kind of the key, I guess. That's what it sounds like.
That's right. Hard work never hurt anybody, right?
Yeah, yeah. Hard work, stay moving, get out, do stuff. Yeah.
That's right. Keep moving. Don't ever stand still.
Wow. I mean, I don't know of anybody else. I'm just trying to sit here and think if not even people that I know, but even reading, you know, about other people, I can't think of anybody that's worked even close to 85 years old. You know, they want out.
Well, you know, I read this story about this lady that owns a furniture store up north. She is 97 and still works every day.
Really? Wow.
Goes to the store every day.
Oh, my goodness. And she's 97?
97, her family cannot get her to retire. She said, not while I'm able. Can you imagine?
Wow. My goodness. Just being able to move and be as active as these people
being able to move and get up and down would be a blessing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Wow. When I'm 85 or 97, I'm hoping that I can just, like, walk to the kitchen.
Oh, my gosh. You just want to be alive at that point.
Yeah, really. And they're out doing stuff and, like, actively going to work. And, wow. How cool is that? My
it's
goodness.
It's pretty cool.
Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
I have enough trouble doing those things now, and I'm decades away from from their age.
Well, you better watch out. You better get to walking.
Yeah.
Maybe chop a little wood.
Get a swing an axe and go for a walk.
That's right.
Wow. Okay, so we were talking about all the wonderful benefits of both of these conservative investments, annuities and life settlements. There are two risks, though, with life settlements that people need to know. What is the first one?
The biggest risk is it could go over, and you would have to pay premiums. So you should know what those premiums are going in. That's why we always put it in the contract. We put everything in the contract. We put the risks, the rewards. We put all this information on that one page. It tells you what the investment is, what the face amount of the policy is, if it goes over, what it'll cost you, what your percentage of profit is. Everything's right there. So, and the second risk is, remember, it's not liquid till it matures.
Okay. Most people understand that, and they know it, and they're fine with it, because to do a life settlement, you have to be accredited.
And to be accredited, you must make $200,000, or you must be worth $1 million, and that's without your house. It's for accredited investors.
Now, here's the thing, though. We talk about these things all the time. We know that, you know, okay, the policy, a policy could go over, but you know that it will mature. You know that it will pay out when it does. And you know exactly how much you're going to make when it happens. On the other side, there are also policies that come in early. It's the long term, I guess, the law of averages. Is that a good way to look at it? For
to describe it, yeah.
Yeah. So for new people that are coming in, if they're looking to think, oh, I'm going to get into a life settlement, I'm going to get into a policy, and I'm going to retire, the more diverse people's portfolio is, those are really the investors that do well. So if you're in one, you're probably not going to thrive as much as somebody who is in, say, 15 or 20. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay.
You need several, because you need something maturing all the time. So that's why you must have several with different dates on them.
Yeah. It's almost like playing leapfrog. You know, as one policy matures, you reinvest. And then another policy matures, you reinvest. And so that's really what keeps the whole thing going. The great thing about it is that regardless, no matter what happens, you're never going to lose your principal. And so that's the thing that I think most people are really drawn to, especially as they get older and getting closer to retirement, if you're not going to work till you're 85 or 90.
That's right.
The other option is annuities. There are not. Are there any risks with annuities at all? Or
I don't think so, because these are fixed index annuities. They're not variable annuities. If they were variable annuities, you could lose your principal. But these are fixed annuities, so that you don't have that risk.
Okay. And there's not really any kind of accreditation. I know they check stuff, but not...
That's right. It's not as severe as it is with a life settlement. They are going to make sure you have enough money, that you have emergency money. If you're broke, you cannot do this. So that eliminates that right away.
Okay. And then finally, before we wrap, what would be an ideal maybe type of investor or age range or stage in their investing career to kind of compare and contrast life settlements versus annuities?
Well, I think if you're under 75, you know, you can still do a life settlement. But if you're 75 and above, you probably need to be looking at an annuity.
Okay. All right. And you do have investors that do both. It's not one or the other.
I have people that do both all the time.
Either way, wherever people are in their investment career, you can put together a plan for them, discuss, you know, what their goals are, where they are now, what they're trying to achieve, things like that. But for that to happen, they do need to call, make an appointment to come see you. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.